Jim Slade, a radio announcer in the 60s from Adelaide. And Jim's on the line now. Hello, Jim.
I like that, bacon and eggs.
That's the first time you've heard it, have you?
Yes, it is, actually. But then I wouldn't expect anything less from you, Paul. You would come up with all the one-offs, the new ones, the new slogans.
Yeah.
Saturday FM sounds like it's doing very well, too.
It is. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. I'll just explain to listeners that Jim Slade in Adelaide was a DJ in Adelaide, but there was nobody bigger as far as a DJ is concerned. Now, you talk about radio announcers now. They don't necessarily have fan clubs, but, Jim, you had a fan club when you were a DJ in Adelaide. You were so big.
I was very, very fortunate. I had some lovely people around me. Yes, I had a fan club. And it's one of those things that back in the 60s, fan clubs were everywhere. Elvis's fan club with Lynn Hook. And Lynn actually started Elvis's fan club. I started the Elvis Presley show, both in 65. And in 67, Lynn went to America and met Elvis. And before she left, people were saying, oh, look, you'll never meet him. You haven't got a chance. She was there for 3 months and she met him on a regular basis.
No.
Just exciting times.
It was fantastic. I talked to Lynn about that. She was just letting people know she ran the Elvis Presley fan club and went across and I think met her on the set. I think she met Elvis on the set of Clam Bake. Would that be right?
Yes, and I've got a photograph, or copy of one of her photographs, with Elvis on that set. It's signed to Lynn Elvis Presley. I mean, that's gold.
It is gold. Now, it's gold, the stuff that you used to do as well. Now, you know, there's not many people had the opportunity to interview the Beatles, and you did. What was that like?
It was a fabulous day. I'm just getting some photos of the crowds, because there were about 300,000 people, which is almost half the population of Adelaide, turned out to follow the Beatles from the airport along Anzac Highway, which is one of the main arteries through to the city, and then they gathered at the town hall. It was just an incredible time. In fact, I can remember Ringo was sick, and so Jimmy Nicol had to fill in for him. And it's an arduous task to fill in for one of the biggest groups in the world.
That's right.
And we were at the South Australian Hotel at the time, and I can remember as we're going to do get some photos taken, Paul McCartney said, really was hanging back a bit. And Paul said to him, "Oh, come on, Jimmy." He said, "You're one of us now, come on." And he had to really be encouraged. And the sad part, Paul, is that I tried to interview him about 4 years ago. And
yes.
I spoke to his son, and his son said to me, "Sorry, my dad's a recluse now."
Oh.
And that's so sad.
You know, but it would have, it kind of, you know, if you were part of a group like that and you had that, you know, those crowds sort of, you know, coming forward in Adelaide, I mean, it was a massive day. I mean, I think most of the population of Adelaide was there. And then, of course, you had their appearance in Sydney, and I was at the airport in Sydney on that cold and windy, rainy day when the Beatles came. If you were part of that group and then had to leave that after that, and Ringo then came back into it, you'd kind of feel like you'd had your brush with fame, but nothing else would come anywhere near that in your career. Do you get what I mean?
Whereas these days, Paul, I mean, Jimmy Nicol arrived back in England. Nobody knew that he'd been with the biggest group in the world. But these days, there would have been PR people out everywhere.
Well, you know, he would have ended up going into another group and becoming a superstar himself.
Yes, he would have. He actually made a couple of records. One was called Husky, which I played, and it was a very good record. But again, he didn't have that machine behind him.
Yeah. So other people that you interviewed as well, now somebody called PJ Proby. Now, younger people won't know the name PJ Proby, but if you've got a bit of mileage on you, you'd know the name PJ Proby. And you spoke to him, and apparently he was flipping hamburgers before he became a big rock star.
That's how he started. Paul, I must tell you that I had I've still got a copy of it, the most fabulous hour and a half interview with PJ. He told me so many stories, and a lot of them will be coming out in my book. But you're right, he was flipping hamburgers. He was a bodyguard for for Rock Hudson and Liberace. He did singing demos as well. He was often chosen because he had the ability to sing like any other artist he chose. He could imitate anyone. And he was called the Man with a Thousand Voices. He did a demo of Bobby V's The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, which, worked in with a man of a thousand voices. But he also recorded demos a lot of the time for Elvis Presley. Now, PJ recorded them in the morning. Elvis had to learn them and sing them at the end of the day for movie shooting. I mean, that's a heck of a situation to be in, but
yeah.
It worked.
Yeah. Now, also Normie Rowe, who's a good mate of mine and a good mate of yours, and Normie, yeah. Of course, went to Vietnam. Like Elvis Presley, he you know, when conscription came, he went off to serve. He went to Vietnam. Now, when he came back, I know that he could not get a gig in Australia when he came back. And what actually happened with that?
Well, I had a chat to Normie only about 4 or 5 months ago, and he told me, and he was so grateful for this, but when he came back, as you said, he couldn't get a gig. Ernie Sigley from Channel 9's Adelaide Tonight rang him once a month and said, "What are you doing, Normie? Come over, do a show. You can stay at my place. We'll pay you some money and we'll fly you over." And Normie said it was so hard to forget people like that. And it's, you've got to be humble about it, because he was so grateful that there were people like Ernie in the business. Who were I think he came over once, but it was just the fact the offer was there every month.
Yeah, that's good. Good. Ernie helped a lot of people. Now, before we get on talking about Bon Scott, just one other little tidbit here. Max Merritt, you know, on the Meteors and what have you, had a great song called Slipping Away. You were telling me that Max Merritt, you know, got very emotional at Billy Thorpe's memorial service.
It was very sad, Paul. And it was Max told me it was his most difficult time. He flew from Los Angeles to the memorial service in Sydney. He called Billy his brother in arms, and he had to get up on stage and sing "Slipping Away," while there was Billy lying in the coffin alongside of Max, and right in front of him was Lynn, his wife, and his two daughters. He just took a deep breath and dove in. A very, very difficult time. But and Max, of course, at the moment has a problem with his kidneys. He has dialysis every second day.
Yeah, there was a concert in Adelaide, I remember, that solid gold thing, and I was wanting to see Max Merritt, you know, get up with the Meteors again, and then, of course, he couldn't make it because of ill health.
He's not allowed. I don't think he'll be able to travel back to Australia, but I try and maintain contact with him by phone calls.
Over in New Zealand.
Lovely bloke.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, let's get on to Irene. And tell us, Irene, you guys have sort of worked together. I know you've helped Irene a lot with this book that she's written, Have a Drink on Me. So how did you end up meeting Irene, who was, of course, the widow of Bon Scott? She was married to Bon Scott from AC/DC. How did you end up meeting Irene?
Well, I've got a show once a month called Baby Boomers Rock Adelaide. And it was suggested to me that I should, because Irene's book was out, and it was under the name of My Bon Scott at the time. And so I had her on stage, and I just got to know her, and she's a lovely girl. She really is. And we just got to know each other. I found out a bit more about her. I didn't know a lot about Bon, but apparently he was a very gentle person. And Irene is somebody who's got a terrific sense of humour. And she said that even after they separated, they still caught up with each other. They were still friends. And until Bon's sad parting.
Yeah.
But and then it was, I got onto a, I found out that the My Bon Scott had only been released in Australia and New Zealand. So I started to look around for some publishers, because it needs worldwide distribution. And I finally got onto a publisher, and he changed the name from My Bon Scott to Have a Drink on Me.
Right.
And different colour. Information is, it's just the way that... that Irene felt about, she talks about the way she felt about Bon. She was really in love with him. But she thought that, you know, things went to a stage where they just couldn't get on any further. That's the story with a lot of our lives, isn't it?
It is. Look, there's a little interview I found with Bon Scott. You probably are aware of this, but on the album, I think it's called Vault. Yeah, the album is called Vault, which was released in the 90s, and that had a lot of, you know, AC/DC on it. It was an AC/DC album with Bon Scott. But on one of the tracks, on the very last track, I found out that there's a whole lot of silence, and then there's some interview grabs with Bon Scott on that particular last song. And they're called the secret interviews, because most people, they would listen to the song and then take the song off. But there is silence and then these interviews. Were you aware of that?
No, I'm writing it down now.
No, well, I only discovered this last night when I was doing my research. And someone, when I was doing I called somebody and they said, look, Paul, check out Vault. If you've got a copy of Vault, which I have, I've got a copy of Vault. And I went on to Vault, and then there's all this silence, and then there's these interviews with Bon Scott. Now, they're not very long pieces, but they're nice little collector's item pieces.
Yeah.
And I've actually, I've got a couple of those, and I've grabbed a few off, and I'll play that when I'm talking to Irene very, very shortly. Look, we've got to wrap this up because we're going to talk to Irene. But you were mentioning about Bon Scott being a very gentle person.
Yes.
Covered with a camera crew, we went on tour with Bon in the 70s and up in the Bathurst region of New South Wales, around that area, Orange, Bathurst and what have you. And I found him a very gentle soul too. The public persona, and maybe privately he was a bit of a wild boy and a bit of a, you know, a terror, but when you met him off stage, he was quite a gentle soul.
Yep. I never met him. I would love to have met him. But I listened very carefully to what Irene said. And as I said, she and Bon just had a good time, a good laugh with each other. And it was just a lovely experience. It's just sad that it ended up the way it did.